Our third case for this morning is Jane Doe 2 against McLean County Unit School District. Ms. Bullock?
Good morning. May it please the Court, my name is Ellen Bullock and I represent the plaintiff appellant, Jane Doe 2. The McLean School District and its high-level administrators, with power and authority to take corrective action, for selfish reasons and for perhaps professional advancement or fear of unpleasant publicity, passed John White, a known serial sexual harasser teacher, to Urbana, in order to keep him out of their school district and put him in another school district.
Now, Ms. Bullock, I think you've made a very creative argument here, and I understand, of course, that McLean County School District is a recipient of federal funds for Title IX purposes, and I can certainly see that there comes a moment when they took an action by writing recommendations and verifications of employment, whether we want to parse that down to an action that included omissions or an action, whatever. I don't want to worry about that right now. But what I'm concerned about is the line of cases that the Supreme Court has developed for the implied private right of action under Title IX, you know, Cannon, Gebser, Davis, etc. There is no case that the Court has decided that has seen this much of a disconnect between the injury that the particular plaintiff suffered, which is the injury Jane Doe 2 suffers here in Urbana, and the culpable action that the funding recipient takes, which is a couple of steps back down the line when the McLean District allows, you know, it doesn't really blow the whistle on Mr. White. So what reason is there for us to think that the Court wants us to take that implied private right of action and extend it as far as you're arguing?
I think the Court does address a situation such as this through Title IX and through its case law in Title IX. There is some the standards of Title IX. Yes, the Davis standards for deliberate indifference. I am not unaware of what Your Honor says, that this is in some sense a unique factual pattern because he was passed to another school district.
See, what precisely worries me is that it's not unique. And you have cited cases from, and so have your opponents, you know, with, whether it's police officers under 1983 going to other places. This happens actually, unfortunately, all the time with doctors who are negligent, who get passed along to another hospital. It could happen. The Catholic Church has unfortunately had some experience with priests being passed. I mean, in other words, this is not unique. And so I'm worried about a lot of aspects of this case. And I'm worried about reading into an implied right of action that the Supreme Court seems to be trying to keep a lid on this new theory.
If Your Honor's concern is an expansion of Title IX liability through the implied right of action cases, is that the concern?
It is, yeah. I mean, why should we read something where the Court has really seemed to me to try to, they've found an implied right of action, but they've insisted on actual knowledge. It's not quite the same as the right of action for discrimination that we see, say, under Title VII, for instance.
I would say that Title IX standard, the one you just mentioned, actual knowledge and then deliberate indifference, are applied in the same manner in this case. I'm not saying the facts are identical to any Supreme Court case out there, but I would say that the Title IX standards apply in the same way to limit any inappropriate liability or expanded liability.
What about the control factor, though? Don't you? Doesn't the defendant have to have control over the whoever is responsible for the misconduct?
I agree with the control aspect, and do not back away from it. McLean passed White, and these are narrow circumstances. They are the Section 1983 case and the police department SASIC have had similar. But on these narrow facts, as pled in the Second Amended Complaint, Jane Doe 2 is asking for Title IX liability for very direct, very affirmative bad acts.
So is it your theory that McLean had control over him at the moment they give the recommendation or the verification of employment? I don't want to call it a recommendation, but you know, at the point they send the documents to Urbana?
Yes, they controlled his landing in Urbana. And they did so not through omission or sort of mere negligence, but they did so through affirmative bad acts, including falsification of a verification, and we as lawyers know a verification means a promise of truthfulness.
Your pleading says that Urbana didn't rely on any of that stuff.
The Second Amended Complaint would have alleged that Urbana relied on the falsification verification form. Most respectfully, and it probably wasn't pled as artfully as it should have been.
Even if they had control to that point, doesn't McLean's control end? They can't determine which classrooms he goes into and how he conducts those classes once he lands at Urbana.
But they do control his landing in Urbana, and they also do this interesting thing where they take all this information, this known sexual harassment, and they make it unavailable, again, through illegal means. Violation of ANCRA is illegal, and they did so.
Could you clarify, though? You're saying known sexual harassment, but I thought there were parts of your complaint that were critical of McLean for failing to investigate parental complaints about Mr. White.
Right.
And so I'm not clear whether it's your position that by the time he leaves the McLean School District, they are aware that he's of the full horrible scope of this man's behavior, whether they really just had a lot of red flags that they weren't looking at.
Most respectfully, I would say they are aware that he's a serial sexual harasser. They did not call DCFS, so no criminal investigation was made that would have resulted in the guilty plea, which he later did. So there's not a guilty plea level of knowledge, but there is a level of knowledge. And there is a level.
It's hard for me to imagine that they would not have called the public authorities if they knew, just for example, that he was exposing himself to second grade children. Did they know that? Is it your allegation that they knew that?
Yes. It's my allegation that parents had come and said that he was touching their daughters, isolating their daughters, making their daughters touch him in ways that were inappropriate. All of that is pled and has to be assumed true, but it also is true in this particular case. He was a known serial harasser. These parents kept coming. Now, you can say that there wasn't the level of knowledge that you would get with a guilty plea, but that was only because they were hiding it from DCFS and the police. It wasn't that the knowledge was of mere verbal, although that can be very painful and cause suffering also when it's from a powerful teacher to a vulnerable victim. But that was not the case. It was of touching and inappropriate touching, and it was of matters that would necessarily be require mandated reports. The Illinois Abused and Neglected Child Reporting Act says that a suspicion of child abuse or a risk of child abuse must be reported. So there's nothing in the allegations that is weak in this sense. And they had also multiple parents. I would ask the court to consider when a school district has parents coming in one after another, it's not a sort of mere iffy system. It's a time where they knew, and this is a part of their knowledge that maybe kind of gives a quip that shows their knowledge. When they were actually passing him, they took him out of his classroom for the end of the year, about approximately 25 days. They removed him from his classroom because they didn't want him to cause any further harassment, any further incidences. They knew he was a serial harasser. They removed him from his classroom, And they referred to him amongst themselves in the emails that were to help get the documents ready to pass him to the next school as "he's a dandy!" exclamation point.
Yeah, that seemed kind of strange to me. Let me ask you a procedural question. You have your Title IX theory, and then you have some state law theories. And as I read the district court's opinion, the district court reaches all of these, both those that arise under federal law and those that would be under the court's supplemental jurisdiction. Did you ever ask the district court, should it reject your Title IX claims, to dismiss the state claims without prejudice? So it looks to me like the whole thing has been disposed of.
I think that's correct.
Okay. And you did not ask for dismissal without prejudice?
I didn't get a chance to, but no, I did not.
Okay.
That's correct.
So the other issue that comes up, again, kind of focusing on what Judge Tinder was saying a few minutes ago about the control, is whether, in some sense, this case by Jane Doe 2 from Urbana is really, in a sense, trying to assert the rights of the children in McLean County who were abused by him. It feels a little bit like a third-party rights case.
Well, I think the McLean students have their own causes of action. I don't think they need Jane Doe 2 or have Jane Doe 2 bringing their actions. I think she's bringing her own. Mm-hmm. I think that she is saying that under Davis, if a school district knows of sexual harassment by a teacher, and that case was a peer case, but if a school district knows of sexual harassment by its teacher and it is deliberately indifferent, meaning failure to take corrective action, and Davis explains...
Now, Davis said involve a school district who had control over the teacher that was involved. She was an employee of that school district, right?
And they had control over White. I think that's absolute. They had control over White and passed him through their control. There was no other means.
Well, they used to have control, but they don't have control now. That's the point.
Well, I mean, at some point, there will be not enough bad actions for there to be control. For example, if they told the truth on the Urbana form, I think that would end the matter right there, or if they made mandated reports. I mean, they could use their control in a sense that they would no longer have liability. But on the narrow facts of this case, they used their control over the harasser, White, and they used it to pass him. Davis defines deliberate indifference as expose, lay open, make vulnerable.
So you don't think that there's a problem with the temporal gap between the last moment that the McLean people had control, which is when they pass him, and then the later harm to Jane Doe 2. And the district court is worried about that, and I'd also appreciate your addressing the other thing the district court was worried about, which was what it saw as a potentially very long chain of responsibility, because if this hadn't come to light, say, in Urbana, and he'd been passed along to Chicago instead, does that mean, you know, you go all the way back to McLean, or, you know, and on, you can imagine. And the district court just didn't see an end to it.
I understand. I would say that in the narrow facts of this case, the other cases are not raised. But I would say, no, there would be an end to liability. The direct affirmative bad acts, the failure to take responsive steps or to take such steps that involve such bad conduct or such illegal or fraudulent means, those are the control mechanisms, and those will not apply to the next school district or the next or the next or the next. There was an interaction between McLean and Urbana for the purpose of getting rid of White that makes this case different than the cases that fall the next and the next and the next. There's a comparison to the Sasek case. You have to show that there was direct deliberate indifference to known sexual harassment before you have a Title IX case. And so the farther-reaching cases would not be able to show that direct control and direct action.
Okay. If you want to save a minute for your rebuttal, you're there.
Thank you. And I would thank you, Your Honors, on behalf of Jane Doe.
Okay, Mr. Kearns?
Yes, ma'am. Your Honor, I'm Jim Kearns. I'm here on behalf of the district and defendants Chapman, Pye, Heineman, and last one I forget. Everyone except Mr. Heidbreeder.
Yes, I was surprised you didn't file a consolidated brief, actually. I didn't see too much difference in the position. A few arguments here and there that may have applied to one, not the other. But
Perhaps that would have been a good idea, Your Honor.
In any event, pretty nasty stuff to be defending.
Your Honor, if you take the pleadings at face value, that's very true. However, I do want to make a couple of points. And one is that although it's alleged in the complaint that the things that were done to Jane Doe 2 were also done in Bloomington, and I do not deny that, that was something that was completely unknown at the time that John White left Bloomington. There were some complaints about parents which were addressed by the district, unsatisfactorily, of course, to her. Every single thing that was alleged was different in kind and nature, and every single thing was something that was done in public inappropriately. There's a letter of recommendation that's referred to at some length in the statements of facts. That letter of recommendation never got to Urbana. They didn't know it existed. The allegations of the complaint, as you pointed out, were that Urbana was never made any attempt to contact Unit 5 before John White was hired.
But, you know, I guess there are two different sorts of things that two different types of information. One is information that we can be certain as a common sense matter anybody would want to know. You'd want to know, your school district, that is to say, would want to know before they hired anyone. So would anyone else. And a history of extensive parental complaints about sexual harassment, I'll just put it that way, is one of those things. There are other pieces of information that you wouldn't necessarily want to know. Did such and such a teacher, you know, also coach the soccer team? Well, I mean, maybe that's interesting, but unless you have some reason to think that that's interesting, you can wait for somebody else to ask you about those extracurricular activities. I find it very difficult to understand how the McLean School District wouldn't have recognized this level of complaints as an extremely pertinent fact. And I also think, as a recipient of federal funds, you know, I can understand the argument, at least, that there was a moment when you did still have control over Mr. White where you could have taken some remedial measure that might or might not have arrested what happened in Urbana, but at least would have been an affirmative step.
I accept your point, Your Honor, but that's not sufficient to invoke liability under Title IX. As has been pointed out by the Supreme Court and by this Court, Title IX requires that at the time of the occurrence, and the occurrence isn't when they write the letter of recommendation, the occurrence is when Jane Doe 2 suffers molestation.
Isn't that a part of the question we have to decide? Your opponent is really pushing very hard the idea that the occurrence is the passing, not the eventual harassment of Jane Doe 2. Her harassment is the consequence of the passing, but the event she seems to be trying to focus on is the passing itself.
Well, Your Honor, I'll ask you this. At the time of the passing, if that's the occurrence, how in the world did anything that Unit 5 did affect her ability to receive appropriate treatment by the school district? She's not our student. We never had any control over her whatsoever. The occurrence has to be when she suffers the harassment, not when anything in between there happens.
So you don't think there's any remedy? Suppose, you know, in full sight of the entire school, he'd raped a child or something. You think you can just write a clean letter of recommendation for him for the next district?
Your Honor, I would say I would hope that you wouldn't do that, but I would also say that's not a violation.
The law has something to say about this.
It does, but it doesn't say it in Title IX. That's my point. Title IX was written to remedy specific ills, and this isn't one of them. And when the court implies a private cause of action, the court is supposed to be conservative in doing that. And she's asking the court to be liberal in a way which is directly contrary to the specific language in Davis and every other case that's ever thought about it. There's simply no basis for imposing Title IX liability on a school district other than the school district where the plaintiff is injured.
Well, I think what you're saying, I mean, we need to be precise about what the issue is and thus what the right answer is. Whether the problem is that she as a plaintiff, in your view at least, is too remote from your actions and she's too far down the causal chain, or whether your view is that somehow this kind of harassment doesn't fall within the anti-discrimination principles of Title IX, that I have trouble believing. I think this kind of harassment certainly does. And if Jane Doe 2 had been a McLean student suing on this case, I think the whole thing would have looked quite different.
I agree with you.
So the problem is not whether Title IX covers this. The problem is, if there is one, has something to do with her as a plaintiff trying to assert it.
That's my point exactly, Your Honor. I wouldn't suggest for a second that the things that are alleged here, if they were performed at the McLean School District on a McLean student, wouldn't be subject to Title IX. The question is this plaintiff an appropriate plaintiff for this conduct as to the Bloomington School District, McLean School District?
Mm-hmm. And is this based on some theory that maybe he was going to reform after he left Bloomington? Or?
Well, Your Honor, you're asking me to assume the truth of the pleadings and then psychoanalyze. I think that the situation is different than it was pled, and that the understanding of the school district was very different than what is asserted here.
Right, but assuming the truth of the Second Amendment amended complaint, which is our posture, if you can pass him along with no responsibility yourself, I guess that means that we are willing to assume that things might change in location number two here, Urbana.
I think it means that the public policy of Illinois is that you don't accept, except in very limited circumstances, liability for the intentional acts of someone else.
Okay.
Let me follow up on a question Judge Wood asked your opponent about the supplemental claims. I take it you didn't request that the judge decline jurisdiction after disposal of the federal claim.
That's correct, Your Honor. We did not.
So both sides are perfectly happy with the federal court deciding these somewhat out there state law claims?
Yes, sir.
Well, if you would like to share any of your time with Mr. Brandt, you may do that. Or you.
That was our intention, Your Honor.
Anything further to say? We're here to hear you.
No, Your Honor. I'm going to have to let Mr. Brandt finish up with the case. Thank you.
Okay, sure. Thank you. Mr. Brandt.
Hey, please, the court. Peter Brandt for defendant Dale Heidbreder. The federal courts in dealing with Title IX have put parameters on where liability can be established.
But Mr. Heidbreder isn't vulnerable under Title IX, is he?
He's not personally liable under Title IX under the Smith case. I agree with you there.
So I wasn't sure why you spent. I certainly understand why you would have briefed other theories on his behalf, but.
He's an employee, and I think that as long as he is named as a defendant, he's along for the ride, I guess.
On a Title IX theory, he isn't. I mean, he certainly is along for the ride on the supplemental claims.
Sure. I think that it's important to at least tease out those issues, though, because I do think they affect McLean County, of which he was an employee. But you're right, and plaintiff conceded that in the reply brief, that mm-hmm. there is no claim. But just to follow up on what Mr. Kearns said, in the Schrum case, the Eighth Circuit made it clear that there are some parameters in this context, and the factual situation there is clearly in line with what's been alleged here. In the Schrum case, we had an Eighth Circuit case in which there was a particular employee.
Former employee case.
It's a former employee case. He left. He gets not what Mr. White got, which is simply a verification of his employment, the days that he worked. There's no letter of recommendation. There was simply an indication of the days that he worked. In Shrum, there's a recommendation.
He gave him an honorable discharge, in effect.
He did. He gave him an honorable discharge and said he's a great teacher. Let's, in a situation where it was known that he was a harasser. And the court said there that you have to have two things. You have to have control over the situation, and you also have to have a special relationship, neither of which were there in that circumstance, and neither of which are here in the Title IX claim, the Title IX claim alleged by the plaintiff here. So
it's hard to imagine how Mr. Heidbreger wouldn't have had a duty to report these parental allegations to the DCSF folks.
He sure did. He had all those. He had that obligation. It was clear under the state law, under ANCRA, that he has that obligation. No question about it. There are criminal sanctions.
That he should be indicted?
Well, there was a question about whether he was going to be indicted, and the McLean County State's Attorney decided he was not going to indict anyone for any of the employees under the ANCRA statute. But what this court said in the Collier case is clear, and that is having a pretty thorough review of all the case law interpreting ANCRA and other states, similar statutes in other states. What this court said in Collier was, sorry, there's no private right of action, and the reason was, at least as I read the opinion, that there were certainly clear sanctions, and there was no reason to believe that those sanctions, loss of your license to teach, and criminal sanctions were not sufficient, that they weren't sufficient to enforce the statute. And that's why the legislature in this state, Illinois, has not imposed a civil or added a civil right, I'm sorry, a right of...
Private right of action is what you want to say, yes, right.
So that's, I think, the problem with the plaintiff's case. I think the issues that have been identified by Judge Tinder are clear. There is no control over White after he leaves for the criminal acts. And to impose that, which is what plaintiff wants to do, what they're contending here is that it's somehow socially efficient to do that. Well, we would then be imposing on Dale Heidbreger an obligation that we don't impose upon anyone else.
But, you know, here's the problem. You know, suppose having learned his lesson in Bloomington, you know, Mr. White is much more effective at concealing his bad behavior once he moves to Urbana. So there are a bunch of people, we have to assume, in Bloomington sitting around knowing that this man is a predator. And there are a lot of children in Urbana who are being victimized by him. There's something very disturbing about that picture.
I'm pretty sure that if I go online, Your Honor, and I look and I'm trying to find out who the sexual predators are in my neighborhood or who lives within a mile of my house.
You do that, but we're in a situation where the Bloomington people decided to stay quiet about it, so he never shows up in those databases in Bloomington.
All I'm saying is that the obligation at that point in time, if I know there's a sexual predator in my neighborhood, the law does not put on me or even the police the obligation to prevent a crime that may happen in the future. We know that sexual predators are likely repeaters, I assume.
You're a school district, and what I'm saying is if the school district knows that this man is a predator and they say nothing about it and, you know, just hope that they can clean up whatever problems there are left behind in their own district, it's just very troubling to think that you can shuffle him off to another district where he's now free to harm other children.
Again, assuming that the facts as alleged are true, and as you, I think, properly noted, it's unclear what exactly Unit 5 did know. And I guess the corollary to that is it really reasonable? Are those facts really reasonable that all these people at Unit 5 knew these things and kept quiet about them?
I mean, I don't have a Twombly-Iqbal plausibility problem with this. If anything, I mean, I think this case gets down to how far does Title IX go and what happens to the supplemental claims.
I think that's right. And I believe that the fact of the matter is that it is too attenuated. There is this temporal relationship that exists that I think the district court really found was troubling and didn't fit within the ambit of the law. So thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. You have a minute left, Ms. Bullock.
Your Honors are correct. This is pretty nasty stuff. Let me say briefly about the verification of employment form, which came in late through the second amended complaint. But it is important. Those were false statements. They had kept White out of his classroom for 10 days approximately in October because he viewed pornography on his computer. That isn't even the sexual harassment claim. That's a different thing, pornography on the computer. That wasn't even about a little girl or her parents' complaints. And then they took him out at the end of the year for a period of approximately 25 days, so a period in total of 35 days approximately. He's out of his classroom. Urbana asked, did he teach the full year previously? Yes, he taught 180 out of 180 days, and he was in his classroom 100% of the time. We verify that as superintendent of this school district. And there's where our problem is. That kind of direct, authoritative action is not reasonable or corrective under Davis. And not only that, it's fraudulent, and it's wrong, and it's an Illinois tort. And it's relied upon by the next school district. The pedophile is a repeat pedophile. All child pedophiles are. And he quickly repeats his misconduct, and quickly the victims add up. That is why Jane Doe 2 is here today. She was the victim in Urbana, and it's unfortunate that she was. She seeks redress for that. Judge Tinder, I don't know how to... do this procedurally at this point, but I don't think plaintiff is necessarily perfectly happy with the federal court deciding the state claims, but I think that I have not asked for them to be severed off. Thank you, Your Honor.
All right. Thank you very much. Thanks to all counsel. We will take the case under advisement.